Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby-related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening. Hi, I'm Deb Flaschenberg. I'm your host of Yoga, Birth, Babies. And today we're talking about the effects of stress and the pelvic floor. Oh, you know, if you've listened to Yoga Birth Babies, you know I love talking about diastasis and the pelvic floor. And we went so deeply into the relationship of stress, what that does to your nervous system, what that does to your hormonal system, and what that does to your pelvic floor. It was fascinating. And the first part of our conversation had very little to do with the actual pelvic floor muscles. It was a lot about other parts of the body that we need to attend to help the pelvic floor free itself from the effects of stress. It was fascinating. I absolutely love this conversation. So I invited Haley Kava on. She is a physical therapist that focuses in the pelvic floor. Let me tell you a little bit about her. So Haley Kava, pelvic floor PT, never wanted to be a pelvic floor physical therapist. She then gave birth for the first time and realized that labor, birth, and postpartum recovery was the most physically and emotionally demanding thing she had ever done. She, through her recovery, she realized that all people with pelvic floors deserved more information and empowerment about how to address their common but often taboo issues. So she created Haley Kava Physical Therapy from this passion to spread this information and to ensure that no person feels alone in dealing with any pelvic floor problem. And Haley was so gracious with her information that I just was thrilled through this conversation. If you could see me, I was smiling and giddy because when we start talking pelvic floor, we start talking about how people can relieve some of their discomforts, and especially if someone can have a more functional birth because their pelvic floor and their physicality is more functional, that is what fuels me. So I was just absolutely thrilled with this conversation. I am sure you're going to enjoy it. Before we get to that, I just want to remind you that you can run over to our website, prenatalyogacenter.com, and download your free downloadable 5 simple solutions to the most common pregnancy pains. And you can also think that is perfect for postpartum, because why live in discomfort when there can be some easy solutions to that? So go grab that. And then while you're on the website, check out our schedule page so we can take classes together. So we've got live stream classes, we've got re-releases, we've got some on-demand classes and workshops. And for listeners of Yoga Birth Babies, you can get $10 off any yoga package, an 8-class card or a monthly unlimited for pre or postnatal with the code YBB10. YBB, Yoga Birth Baby 10. So check out our schedule page, sign up for a class, enjoy a discount, and make sure that you say hi. And then the last thing I just want to share before we head into this wonderful conversation is about our teacher training. People have been asking what we're planning on doing. So what we're seeing now is for the next few, they're going to be online. At least the next one coming up, we're going to do March and April online. And then we're going to reexamine our in-person. And I'm feeling really hopeful that we should be back in person. So keep an eye on our website for that. It's a very in-depth, very pelvic floor friendly teacher training. We talk a lot about the anatomical and physiological changes of the pregnant body, what yoga poses can help somebody have a more efficient and functional birth. We talk a lot about childbirth education and how we can bring that into our yoga classes. So it's something I'm passionate about. I'm really excited that it has continued to evolve. And if this is authentic and rings true for you and you're getting an idea that this is something you want to study, check it out on our website, prenatalyogacenter.com. Okay, we're going to take a super quick break. When we come back, please enjoy my conversation with Haley.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, Haley. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. I love talking about the pelvic floor. I truly think I should have been like a pelvic floor PG instead of a yoga teacher, but it's one of my passions. So when you said you would talk about stress in the pelvic floor, I was so excited. So thank you.
Yes. I never intended to be a pelvic floor physical therapist. I actually didn't take, we had a women's or pelvic health elective in PT school and was like, no, I don't want to deal with pee and poop all the time. And then, when I was pregnant with my first son, I was like, oh my gosh, teach me all the things about the pelvic floor. How come I didn't?
Oh, really? That's so interesting.
Yeah. And then really took a turn in my career, after, you know, dealing with those things myself. And now I'm a total pelvic floor nerd. So,
Tell me a little more about that. So how long were you a PT before you had your child? And then what was it like going back to learn this? Cause it's definitely different than general physical therapy.
Yeah. So I was, I played, volleyball at Syracuse University. And so was always in athletics and dealing with my own athletic injuries. And so in PT school and right after PT school, worked in sports medicine, at a university and working with athletes. And then met my husband, who's in the military, and we moved to North Carolina and was working with military athletes and, you know, primarily military members. And was dealing with a lot of old injuries that were causing me problems, and then working with people with a lot of chronic pain issues, and found a practice of physical therapy called postural restoration. And that is just a subspecialty of physical therapy, which is what, roots all of my practice. And, through that, we talk a lot about the pelvic floor and breathing and asymmetries. And so I had my interest in the pelvic floor was kind of peaked when I started learning more about PRI, was how we call postural restoration. I'd probably been practicing as a PT for 4 or 5 years. When my husband and I decided to have our first baby. And that's really when I realized that in our community, in my area, and for myself, there was just such a lack of support throughout pregnancy and particularly in postpartum, and really pelvic floor problems at any time. So after I had my son and was dealing with some personal pelvic floor problems and trying to get the help that I needed and couldn't find it, I just became the pelvic floor PT I needed.
That's so interesting. So were you able to step back in your physical therapist's mind and be like, okay, I'm having these issues. What could that mean and how do I deal with it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was dealing with sort of symptomatic pelvic organ prolapse, mm-hmm. and I knew that I didn't have an issue with muscle weakness, and that when I would get my pelvic floor muscles assessed and checked, I could contract strongly. And so it was confusing because I was like, well, everything I've sort of heard or what everyone's telling me up to this point is that if I'm dealing with this symptom, it must mean that I have weakness. In fact, it was the opposite of, not necessarily direct opposite, but it was about coordination and about balance in the pelvic floor muscles versus, versus just it's strong, it's too tight, or it's too weak. Mm-hmm. And so via understanding asymmetries and balance of the pelvic floor through my postural restoration training, and then layering in the pelvic floor training, kind of helped me sort that all out for myself and for other people too.
Oh, I love hearing that, because I think so many of us come to where we need to work because we're going to experience. My first child, the pushing was forever, the labor was forever, and my pelvic floor was not happy during any of it. There was a lot of rehab from that, and it really got me interested in the pelvic floor work and then how I work with my prenatal students. And you totally hit it. It's about balance. That I know in my body, it was totally imbalanced. And that's why, and in many bodies, that's why labor can be more challenging. And then the rehab after can be confusing. So you totally hit it. I think we're going to have a great conversation, because I think we're very much on the same page. But I guess we should start to back up. So if anyone is brand new to this podcast, let's go over just a very basic review of what is the pelvic floor, in case someone clicked on, they're like, what is this thing they're speaking about? And why it's so important for it to be well balanced and healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think one of the biggest things that I like to explain to my clients is that the pelvic floor lives in the bottom of our pelvis. So our pelvic bones, really where kind of our hips come out of, starts at our pubic bone in the front. So where our two pelvic bones meet in the middle. And then, the muscles kind of start underneath there, and then they span under, and they cross all the way across to our two sit bones. So if you kind of rock back and forth on your seat or on your chair, the two kind of bony parts of the bottom are our two sit bones. So our pelvic floor spans from the pubic bone in the front to the sit bones in the side, and then they join up at the tailbone in the back. So it's this sort of bowl of muscles that live in the bottom of our pelvis. And that it lives inside of this container of the pelvis. And it's the bottom of our core system. And so it functions with our abdominal muscles in the front, our back muscles in the back, and then our diaphragm at the top. So the diaphragm being the muscles that are underneath our lungs, at the top. And so the pelvic floor is sort of the one quarter of that entire core system. But the pelvic floor muscles are at the bottom, and they have a bunch of major functions that are really, really important for our life. And so they have sphincteric function, which basically means they stop our pee and poop from coming out of our body when we don't want them to, and letting them out when we do. And same thing for people who have vulvas, can let babies out. They provide stability, so they can help stabilize our pelvis and our back and our hips. They have support function, so they help keep our pelvic organs inside of our body, which is good. And they have sexual function, so they play a role in arousal and orgasm, and are, you know, enjoyment of sexual activities. And they also act like a sub pump. And so if anyone's ever had like varicose veins, or vulvar varicosities, the pelvic floor helps play a role in that venous blood return. And so, a relatively sort of hidden group of muscles that we don't think about a lot have a lot of really important functions.
Yeah. See, most people don't think about them until they are forced to think about them when something goes wrong. And then like all they can think about is pelvic floor. Can you talk about the importance of the balance? Kind of like what we were talking about earlier, that not too tight, not too loose, but I think of it kind of like a trampoline. It has to be strong and supple at the same time.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And so the, just like, any other muscle in our entire body, right? An elbow, our bicep, needs to be able to straighten all the way and bend all the way in order to be optimally functional. So if you want to reach across the table and grab your coffee cup, you not only need to have sort of strength in your bicep, but you actually need to be able to lengthen your bicep and then recoil it back back in. And so in order to have all of the functions of the pelvic floor working well, it both needs to know how to fully lengthen and expand, as well as contract and lift up, and do so with coordination, and do so with reflexivity that we shouldn't necessarily have to think about all the time.
Mm. So let's dive into the effects of anxiety and stress on the pelvic floor, because I feel like so many people walk around in a state, or maybe just me. I don't think it's just me.
Yeah.
Anxiety
no,
and stress. And I don't think people think, but it can really affect the pelvic floor.
Yeah. So so kind of back up on sort of anxiety and stress is that we have two kind of major halves of our nervous system. So we have our autonomic nervous system and we have our somatic nervous system. And our autonomic nervous system is things that we really don't have control over. And our somatic is things that we do have voluntary control over. And so our autonomic nervous system is into two parts, and it has our sympathetic nervous system and our parasympathetic nervous system. And so our sympathetic is our fight or flight response, and our parasympathetic is our rest and digest. And so we think about kind of what happens in our body when we get scared by something. And we kind of take a breath of air in, we gasp, we maybe kind of arch our back a little bit to kind of prepare ourselves for running or for fighting. And we kind of tighten our bodies up. And that changes our body from a chemical perspective, that changes our body from a postural perspective. And the pelvis as a movable, structure of bones, our sympathetic nervous system, our stress response, our anxious response is activated, it can change those postural positions, which can impact the tension that we experience in our pelvic floor. Mm-hmm. From a kind of direct postural standpoint, but also from a chemical and sort of nervous system standpoint, those impacts can create different responses in our digestive system, in our bladders, and in our gut that can also have impacts on that pelvic floor function as well.
Is that why when people are nervous they have to pee?
Yeah, it can be nervous peeing. It can be nervous pooping.
I didn't know about nervous pooping. That's interesting.
Like before marathons, right? You want to, the bathrooms are usually packed and usually don't smell great. And so when our sympathetic nervous system is sort of activated, we would typically think that it would kind of constrict, right? We would kind of tighten up, and it would be advantageous from a fight or flight standpoint to not have to empty our bladder, not have to empty our bowels, which can happen. But sometimes when our sympathetic nervous system goes into a little bit of overdrive, the system then decides, oh, let's actually eliminate. Let's get rid of everything we have in order to lighten the load so that we can run faster, or we can fight better. Or in the case of bowel movement, sometimes it's like scare off a predator.
Mark your territory.
Yeah, exactly. In PT school, our practical exams were called OSCEs, and I lived with two other girls from my class, and we called it OSCE bowel syndrome. you'd just digestively have a little bit of fecal urgency and urinary urgency and all those things that would come on as well.
I had not thought of that until this conversation. Like, that is so and now I'm like thinking about, I was just reading a book where a character got scared and he wet himself, and I'm like, oh, I get it now. Like, I see the response of the nervous system there.
The experience of like being in Target and getting the urge to need to go to the bathroom, and the fear of not being able to find the bathroom because it's an unfamiliar place, drives up that urge even more, right? And so then we're scrambling to make it to make it there. And so we can use different strategies to kind of hack our nervous system via, you know, deep breaths or different movements in order to kind of dampen that nervous system response.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's dip into that. So what are some of your favorite methods when somebody's feeling like they have a very overly engaged pelvic floor? What are some of your ways of helping it to get into more of a relaxed state?
Yeah. So, without going too deep into the vagus nerve, right? The vagus nerve is a really, kind of hot topic right now.
I feel like I've heard a lot about it recently.
There's a lot of really great books out right now all about the vagus nerve, and it's called the traveler, because it, you know, it originates in our, it's a cranial nerve. So it starts up in our brain, and it travels all throughout kind of our body, all the way into our digestive system. It helps control our heart rate. It helps control our breathing rate. Runs through our diaphragm, runs around our stomach and into our you know, intestines. And ways that often when my clients are dealing with a lot of pelvic floor tightness, a lot of stress, sort of focusing all of our attention on trying to force the pelvic floor to relax is almost more stressful than trying to look outside, what are some other ways we can stimulate this sort of vagus nerve or this parasympathetic nervous system response. And so we have sympathetic and parasympathetic nerve centers in the roof of our mouth. So breathing with the tongue elevated or using the tongue to stimulate the roof of the mouth. Chewing our food. We also have those nerve centers around our esophagus. So really chewing our food and enjoying our food and swallowing after chewing a lot can stimulate some of that. Different strategies of releasing the neck and the throat. And then also a lot of breathing activities that focus on the posterior rib cage expansion are a few different ways that we can stimulate that parasympathetic response. So, singing, humming, breathing into balloons, breathing into kazoos.
I love that a lot of this has nothing to do with focusing on the release of the pelvic floor. We can start, because I think sometimes people can think like, okay, I got to release my pelvic floor. I got to learn how to engage, to release. But that can feel overwhelming, I think, if it's very unfamiliar to somebody. But the idea of chewing and breathing, and I've been a big nerd about the back and side ribs. So when you said that, I got a little giddy. But so we can start at an area that has nothing to do with the pelvic floor to learn how to relax. Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. To really, if the pelvic floor often is the victim, right? It gets a lot of the attention. Maybe the symptoms are showing up there. But there was a cascade of other things that happened first. And so in the unwinding process of trying to re-regulate those pelvic floor muscles, we don't have to hit on it so directly. I think that's sometimes a barrier to people even going to pelvic floor PT, because the assumption is that they're gonna, you know, to my maybe potentially painful pelvic floor or healing pelvic floor, you know, get in there and release it very aggressively and do things that might be uncomfortable when that's not the case at all. That there's so many things that we can do to help manage a nervous system and manage the causes of this tension, that can be so effective and so great.
At what point do you start to work on some muscle lengthening? So I'm thinking about, like, sometimes I'll do like happy baby with my students, or try to release around the piriformis, or gentle squats. When does that play in? Or maybe that doesn't quite yet.
Yeah, I would say it's sort of integrated into those activities. So I really like a sort of modified child's pose, where we actually bring the knees in really close and let abdomen rest on the thighs. Mm-hmm. in order to help give a little bit of feedback as to where airflow is going. So is all of that airflow going straight into belly, or can we get some of that airflow directed into that posterior thorax and into mm-hmm. that lateral thorax? And often what we'll find there is once people can appreciate the expansion of the posterior and lateral thorax, they can actually also appreciate that how that air can also move down into their back pockets, into their posterior pelvic floor, mm-hmm. which is anatomically just sort of typically the area where we tend to hold more of that tension, more in the posterior sort of outlet of the pelvic floor, if you will, versus the front. Mm-hmm. And so if we support the front of the pelvic floor with adductors and abdominal support, and expand rib cage, we can start cueing people into feeling that posterior pelvic floor lengthening pretty much right away. And we can integrate that into some of those other activities.
Yeah, and that's going to start a lot of my postnatal classes as we do that. And sometimes I put a blanket between the thighs mm-hmm. and the belly. And I always feel like I just went to the chiropractor because I feel like my back goes like it just, yeah. and I really breathe into that. But I'm thinking more of my pregnant students where we mm-hmm. can't necessarily get into that tight child's pose with that resistance.
We can do that in like using their own internal kind of internal activation of that. So like good long exhales. Our exhalation is going to stimulate more of that parasympathetic response. Mm-hmm. And then the exhalation and pause. So sort of fully getting lungs empty as possible. And then kind of staying in that empty state actually changes our pH a little bit. We get a little bit hungry for oxygen. Carbon dioxide starts building up in our system a little bit. And that in itself will flip a nervous system slightly more into parasympathetics. And we get this then reflexive, beautiful, big opening after sort of a pause at the end of an exhalation. We can support someone, maybe if they can't support abdomen as much, maybe side bodies and getting more lateral and posterior expansion. And with that feeling, oh, my rib cage really opened up and I could feel that air move all the way down into my pelvic floor muscles and lengthen as well.
I think that's a great way to start to refocus. It's not just about, I mean, it's really that kinetic chain that so much mm-hmm. of our body, it's not just, we don't live in a vacuum. It's not like the back lives in its own space. And then the there is that connection. Oh, I love that.
Absolutely.
So here, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's start to talk about the hormonal response to stress and the pelvic floor and pelvic pain. We'll be right back.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
All right, so how does the hormonal response to stress affect pelvic floor and pelvic pain?
Yeah, so we have sort of three big stress hormones, and I will caveat this by saying I'm not a hormone expert, but I can talk about it. Okay. So we have adrenaline, adrenaline and norepinephrine, cortisol. And so adrenaline and norepinephrine are more our immediate response. So we get scared by something, we get these fast spikes of these two hormones, and then it gradually kind of tapers off. And that tapering off period could take, you know, a couple hours to potentially, you know, a day or so. And then, and so that's usually pretty fast, pretty immediate. We might move into like a more tightened response. Our breathing might accelerate a little bit with that. And that could play into some pelvic floor tension. But generally, that's going to be a more rapid, you know, a good response. And I think sometimes we think that stress responses are always bad. But this normal spike and fall of these sort of stress hormones is okay. It's how we live. A little bit of stress is okay. And then cortisol is our sort of slower response stress hormone. And it's made in our sort of deeper brain. And the amygdala and hypothalamus are sort of really deep old brain structures, help control this cortisol function. And so what I find really interesting about cortisol and how it's produced really in that deep old brain that we have is that the hypothalamus is actually very close anatomically to the back of our nose. So if you look at a skull, the roof of our mouth and the base of our nose, and then just behind our nose is, you know, brain wise is really where that hypothalamus is. And so, if we, are breathing in a more extended pattern where we're breathing more through our mouth, we're breathing more with ribs flared, and we're kind of extending our back using our accessory muscles of respiration. So our back muscles, our neck muscles to help pull air in when we're just breathing at rest, when there's nothing extremely stressful or difficult that our body is doing, we're going to sort of stimulate this cortisol production, and then the cortisol production will feed more of this sort of sympathetic response as well. Mm-hmm. And so that can, again, all play into some of that pelvic floor muscle tension and kind of disorganization. And so, this sort of constant upregulation of cortisol and stress response, potentially with like lack of sleep, which is big for postpartum clients.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, one night of poor sleep can upregulate our cortisol for a few days. And so, so the breathing, sleep, and cortisol and stress hormones in the pelvic floor are all really, really tightly interconnected. And so, from a physical therapy perspective, why this is important to me is because two ways we can hack some of that cortisol production via how we're teaching people how to breathe and stimulating the roof of our mouth with the tongue elevated to the roof of our mouth, nasally breathing, and teaching our rib cage and our thorax how to expand and compress, you know, naturally, will help coordinate with the pelvic floor. But also things like ensuring that our clients are, while they're sleeping, are also breathing well. Mm. So, something that goes really underdiagnosed in female clients is sleep apnea and sleep airway sleep disorders. And actually, in pregnancy, women's risk of sleep apnea goes up quite a bit just based on the postural changes and the fluid level changes that happen in pregnancy. And so sometimes the stress response and the pelvic floor tension response that we see in pregnancy and postpartum also is related to this sort of poor sleep dynamics. and so sometimes a thing that I'll prescribe for people who it seems like this stress response is kind of overwhelming their ability to really heal the way we'd like is either seeing about getting a sleep study, Or sometimes it's as simple as, let's try some breathe right strips for a couple nights.
It's so funny you said that. I tell students about that all the time. I'm like, have you tried these? And they look silly, but I've heard they really work.
Yeah. So we talked earlier about how the diaphragm and the pelvic floor kind of mirror each other in that core system. Mm-hmm. Another diaphragm that we have in our body is the roof of our mouth, our soft palate. Mm-hmm. And so posturally, we want these domes to kind of function together. And if we're perpetually in this sort of stress response, stress breathing response, and we're not getting that good soft palate support from a postural standpoint, from our, you know, tongue positioning standpoint, we can really have a big impact. And yeah, so something as silly as a breathe right strip on your nose, a nasal strip on your nose, have a really big
impact.
Big impact. Yeah.
So sure. When someone comes in and they've been having any sort of pelvic pain, do you step back and look at the whole holistic person, checking in mm-hmm. what's their stress level, what looking at their posture, looking at their sleep habits? I like the idea that it's not just, again, muscles living in a vacuum.
Yeah. It's funny. I'd say probably like 60%, maybe 40% of the time, at an initial evaluation, really regardless what the diagnosis is we actually decide together, because, you know, care should be collaborative, is that we actually decide we're going to hold off on our pelvic floor muscle exam the first day. Mainly because I do want to take such a look at the whole picture and really understand what are some of these other things that could be impacting the pelvic floor function, and particularly in cases of a lot of pelvic floor muscle tension or a lot of pelvic pain. We know that if we aren't addressing some of these other things first, that pelvic floor muscle exam experience isn't going to be very good, right? It's going to be tender. It's going to be uncomfortable and painful. And we'd rather not have that happen at our first meeting. And so, so we really want to come up with a global plan, come up with some really good strategies and see those symptoms start to change. And then once we see those symptoms start to change, then we can, explore more of the pelvic floor directly.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just coming back to thinking about pregnant folks and new parents and the level of exhaustion and maybe that low cortisol stress. Mm-hmm. Is that showing up more in pelvic pain because of when you're so exhausted, like I think exhaustion, my posture kind of falls apart.
Yes.
Is it because, or is that one symptom? Because when we're exhausted, we go into that forward head movement. I call it the chicken neck. And then we're caving in, and then the diaphragm's not really working. So is the pelvic pain just kind of like the last domino that falls? And really it's everything that led up to that. Is that making sense where I'm going?
Yeah, that would be kind of my thoughts on it too. Yes, that the pelvic floor is also integrated into our nervous system and can either tighten or release based on some of those nervous system impacts. But I really think it's postural. It's about the container. So if the container is
out of whack,
out of whack, then the pelvic floor is going to be out of whack. And so, it's like not, I don't like to blame the pelvic floor for anything.
it's the scapegoat. The poor pelvic floor is the last thing that shows up. Yeah. So what kind of pelvic floor pain are people coming to you for typically?
Yeah, it can be painful intercourse. It can be pain with trying to put in a tampon or a menstrual cup. It can be, just even skin, like, the superficial vulvar skin, the superficial pelvic floor muscles and the superficial, vulvar skin can get very irritated, and very sensitized when, the muscles underneath are also kind of holding a lot of tension. So even just the contact of their own underwear or their own pants on their vulvas can be uncomfortable. And not so much pain, but issues with like sensations of heaviness and fullness in the pelvis or vulvar varicosities and things like hemorrhoids, constipation are all big indicators that there's pelvic floor muscle imbalance and tension, urinary like bladder pain, incomplete emptying of the bladder, chronic UTIs, all sorts of things like that.
And so then you would, again, kind of assess the big picture. Do you ever prescribe meditation as like homework for them?
Yeah, a lot of times I like to recommend, depending on where they're at, but I really enjoyed using the Gentle Birth app throughout my second pregnancy. So it's a like a hypno birthing type app that also has mindfulness tracks and meditative tracks, Headspace, like all of those, you know, other different types of apps. Absolutely, that could be part of someone's program for sure.
So, yeah, so we can start there and then try to get people out of that. And I feel like, especially now, you know, in a pandemic, and just, I mean, is a lot. And then pregnancy and new parenthood is a lot on a good day. And if we, from what I'm hearing, and again, I'm just kind of throwing these ideas in my brain around, if we could move out of that sympathetic fight and flight, move into the parasympathetic, that could be the beginning of some healing.
Yeah. And so what I will always tell my clients is my job as a physical therapist is to help your body move into a parasympathetic state via breath, via movement, via maybe some specific exercises, maybe some different manual techniques that I use. But also it's probably going to be helpful to build a team. So whether that's meditative coach, whether that's your movement yoga coach, mental health counseling, because there's also other ways that we can tap into this nervous system that if we don't fully address, then yeah, we won't maybe be able to get things all the way better.
So then once the mental states checked in with, and you looked at posture. I call it back it up, stack it up, where we have the pelvis and the rib cage and the head and every, and all our palates, all our domes are well aligned. And breathing is not, you know, tight and constricted. So once the posture and the breath and the mental states checked in on and starting to do well, is that when you start to go into some actual muscle work or so tell me a little bit about what that looks like.
So I like to kind of break it down into planes of movement. So we have three planes of motion. We have the sagittal plane, which is sort of front to back, like a crunching motion. Frontal plane is side to side, and transverse plane is rotation. And we need to be able to control all three planes of motion for life, for function. Walking is, you know, triplanar. All of our muscles are working in all three planes of motion, three dimensions, all the time. And so when we're working on sort of rehabilitation, when someone, you know, postpartum is really in that more, you know, extended position where nothing's stacking up really, the way we like, we want to really own the sagittal plane first. So, you know, you have ribs over pelvis, being able to balance tension in the pelvic floor front to back. And then, so that could also involve strengthening, right? That could involve strengthening abdominals. That could involve strengthening hamstrings or adductors. But we're going to keep it in a more simplified plane. And then as someone's progressing, we could now start to challenge them maybe more in a frontal plane, a side to side, motions, and then gradually then more rotational movements and challenge, and then gradually loading all of those things to then more closely resemble the activities that they want to be able to do. So if that's running or jumping or, you know, Olympic lifting, we're going to kind of build a program that is going to kind of give them the step-by-step guide into whatever that activity is.
That's helpful to know, so that, because I think that we're giving people, you're giving people some great ideas about kind of the checking in. And then at some point they may need some strengthening and some, do you ever do internal release work if someone's just super constricted?
Yeah, absolutely. Typically how I like to approach sort of internal release work is, we want to, if we find an area of tension in the pelvic floor that, that we want people to be able to, appreciate where that is, and then pair that up with a specific exercise that's going to help continue to address that issue. So for example, I see a lot, in clinical practice of like right obturator internus muscles that like to be overactive. So the obturator internus is actually not part of the pelvic floor. It's part of the pelvic wall. And it often likes to kind of take over or help. It's trying to help the pelvic floor, but it's not really, it's not great at it. and can cause pain and just other issues. And so we want to, potentially release that obturator, and that can oftentimes release a lot of symptoms in the pelvis itself. But then we want to give an activity to maybe work the opposite structure that's maybe weak. So a lot of times when we see these sort of over dominating right obturators, we will see kind of a left anterior pelvic floor that's not giving the opposite side of the pelvis the support it needs, or a left abdominal wall that's not balancing out that tension on the pull to that side. So, so we are going to do the release, but really mindfully, with knowing that we are also going to oppose, the why, like why is that obturator holding on? Well, potentially it's holding on because we have, poor left rib cage control, and that's keeping us oriented right.
So just for listeners, deep obturators, I think of those as the deep hip rotators.
Yep. They're a deep hip rotator, and they, on the front of your pelvis, there's kind of a hole, and the obturator fills in that hole. It's a very cool muscle.
I think it is too. So I've been doing some gentle release with a tennis ball to the inside of the sit bones. Is that okay? That's okay. Cause as you're saying,
the where the obturator comes around. So the obturator, belly sits inside the pelvis and then loops around the sit bone and attaches on the hip. And so, yeah, you can get in there under the sit bone to kind of access some of those fibers of the obturator, externally, which is fantastic. Yeah, that's great.
It's painful, but it's helpful. Like, it's painful to the point, cause I do a lot of, you know, yoga and exercise and weights and cycling, and they get really tight. And I realize that I think one of the reasons my first child's birth was so challenging is cause I never, and this was about 10 years ago now, I don't feel like we talked about the pelvic floor quite as much back then. I never released anything, and I was a dancer for years. So I'm quite confident I went into that birth with my pelvic floor probably tight and weak, and just like lifted the hell up. And my psoas is probably like, we're not budging. And so ever since then, it feels like we need to find that balance. So I've been doing I've been instructing students, you know, palpate the inner edge of your sit bones. How does it feel? Is it tender? That might be a sign that we need to release.
And figuring out how do we breathe down into that area that's maybe holding tension, and then like some of the kind of postural things that have evolved over people's entire life. So in gymnastics and dance, we see a lot of difficult births because the external rotation of the femurs and the external rotation of the pelvis and kind of the gymnastics and dance itself is actually is external rotation. And so the obturators as a deep hip rotator,
are working.
And really the posterior pelvic floor in that position will also be kind of tight and short.
Yeah.
And then pulling that pulls toward the front, making the front of the pelvic floor kind of on tension also. But just in a, you know,
and not in the yoga world too. I see, mm-hmm. you see, I wonder if you do see that. Cause, most of the poses are these big celebration of external rotation. So we're constantly looking up and kind of making poses up to find mm-hmm. internal rotation, which I think yes. is highly unappreciated. Just my
internal rotation control is like half of what
I do. I feel like it's just underappreciated. No one appreciates internal rotation.
There's some newer studies that are looking at like the three-dimensional shape of the pelvis. Of birthing people, and deep squatting, hip knees in, feet out,
yes,
are actually increasing the dimensions of that yes. posterior
it does.
Pelvic floor. And so, if we're what you know, yes, that's a very cool application for birth. But there is lots of other times where we can still use those that biomechanical awareness to optimize how we're strengthening a pelvic floor and balancing a pelvic floor for sure.
I get very excited about internal rotation.
Yes.
I tell my students Lamaze came up with this saying, squeeze the knees, birth with ease. So when we can angle the knees in and find mm-hmm. the widening of the sit bones, I get very excited about
yep.
that.
Yes.
So yes. at what point should somebody seek professional help if they've tried a lot of these things? Okay. They've checked in with their posture and their breathing and meditation, and maybe they've even done a little tennis ball to the inner mm-hmm. sit bones. At what point do they like, my pelvic floor issues just need professional help? Where is that line that you see?
Yeah, I think, anytime we're dealing with like urinary incontinence, fecal incontinence, anytime we're dealing with pain that anywhere in the pelvis, that could be in the back or the hips or the front or back of the pelvis. But I guess really it's more so than really any of those markers is like, is this impacting your life? Mm. You know, how do you feel that this is impacting your quality of life? Is this something that's on your mind all the time? Is this something that's distracting you or stopping you from doing the things that you love to do? Mm. And if the answer is yes, then there's absolutely help. You know, sometimes it's not the right time. You know, even in postpartum, if there are things that are going on, but it's more overwhelming to go and seek support than it is to just sort of carry on for a little while. I think that's okay too. Mm. And so if it's the time, if it's impacting how you want to live your life and, it's accessible and it's available, then I think everyone should do it.
I do too. I've had students that come from France and I'm like, go back home for postpartum. It's part of your healthcare that you get pelvic floor PT. It's a shame that it's not available to everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is really why I started doing more on social media and putting more stuff out in the world, like the podcast, because it just, a lot of the basic information feels like it's something that we should have all been taught, yeah. right? Like learning about vulvar care, I feel like is something that we should have learned in school. And so, I always want to share as much information as I can always.
Oh, I appreciate that. I love when people can learn about their bodies and take ownership and feel empowered and not embarrassed. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, if you can share one tip or piece of advice you would like to offer new and expectant parents, and it can be from your hat as a pelvic floor PT or as a parent, whatever you want to share, we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. So what is something that is just jumping from your mind that you want to share?
Oh, let me see. Okay. So what is my big piece of advice? I think, that's tricky. I mean, I have lots of advice. I think it is, that it takes time right? That healing takes time, and coming into your, you know, place as a parent, understanding your kiddo, understanding your body and the changes that your body have gone through is a process, and it's not going to all happen in one day. And it's okay if there's good days, and it's okay if there's bad days, and it's all part of the process.
I like that. Yeah. Where can people find your work?
Yeah, so I'm fairly active on Instagram. So my handle there is Haley Kava PT. And then I also have a podcast called the Don't Beat Around the Bush podcast that I host with my good friend and fellow pelvic floor PT as well, Addie Holzman. And my website is HaleyKavaPT.com.
Thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I really get so lit up when we can talk about pelvic floor stuff. I'm like literally smiling, giggling. It was so exciting. Thank you so much for your time and your knowledge.
Of course. Yeah, my pleasure.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.